I was really eager to turn to Esther chapter 6 this week, where we will be, because I was looking forward to reading about Esther's second banquet for Ahasuerus and for Haman. But when I turned to Esther chapter 6, instead of moving ahead with the account, I found two only slightly related pieces that do resolve earlier parts of our story, so it's quite helpful in the big picture. But I was really looking forward to seeing where we went. I'm eager to see this story come to completion. You remember back in chapter 2 that Mordecai wasn't rewarded for an earlier act of loyalty to the king. We'll see something that relates to that tonight. And of course, you've seen the tension between Haman and Mordecai all throughout Esther. At least as soon as we got to know Haman, we've seen that tension. That will sort of be advanced tonight as well. Esther chapter 6 is described by the commentators sort of interestingly. K.H. Jobe said this: Esther 6 is the most ironically comic scene in the entire Bible. I love irony. And here in Esther chapter 6, we have irony piled upon irony. It just is it's a fun piece. I'm looking forward to being here in this chapter with you tonight. I hope that you'll enjoy the tour through it as well. Haman. You remember Haman? He wants to be honored by all, especially by Mordecai. But here's a spoiler alert. Mordecai will be honored by all, and Haman is going to lead the call to honor him. We'll see that tonight. A. Berlin says this, another commentator on Esther. It's one of the funniest chapters anywhere in the Bible. I love those kinds of accounts. Sometimes in the book of Judges, you come across a really humorous turn. For example, you remember when Ehud goes to deliver a message to Eglon, the king of Moab, and he happens to be left-handed, so he keeps his sword on the other side of his body, and they don't find it, and he ends up doing him in. It's those kinds of accounts that are just, it's fun for me to see the way the twists and turns come, and that certainly will be the case here in Esther chapter 6. Keep in mind this, that while we read through Esther chapter 6, we as the readers already know more about what's going to happen. We know more about the situation as a whole than any of the characters do. We know more than Haman knows. We know more than Ahasuerus knows. We know more than Esther or Mordecai know. We come to this chapter with more knowledge about the whole picture than any of these individual characters have. You know, Haman will eventually, spoiler alert, going to be led to honor Mordecai. You might see this coming, but that's because you're too familiar with the story. But Haman does not see it coming. Try to sort of adopt an attitude of ignorance. For some of us, that's easier than others. Try to adopt sort of an attitude of ignorance so that when we read this, it's like, wow, that is really interesting the way that that turned itself out. So again, at this point in the story, Esther doesn't know about Haman's plan to execute Mordecai. Mordecai doesn't know about Haman's plan to execute Mordecai. They both know about Haman's plan to exterminate the Jews, but they don't know about Haman's plan to hang Mordecai on a pole. Well, let me just think with you little bit by little bit through this chapter. I'll start out just with verse 1. There's a loyalty here that gets remembered. We'll see this in verses 1 through 3, but let me just read verse 1 and we'll sort of set the scene. Esther chapter 6, verse 1. On that night, the king could not sleep, and he gave orders to bring the book of memorable deeds, the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. On that night, remember last week, we're at a couple different points in that day. So this is the day when Esther invited Haman and Mordecai to her banquet. It was the day earlier where Esther took a brave stand and stood there and waited for Mordecai to extend the scepter. We're still on that same day. It's later that day, maybe that night. So that's where we are in the story. It's the same day we were at last week. It's nice that Ahasuerus just happens not to be able to sleep that night. Just happens, of course. The way all this stuff is, it just happens. Well, maybe it doesn't just happen. The Septuagint translates the Hebrew this way: Yahweh took sleep from Mordecai. So God, if you follow the Septuagint's reading, God robbed sleep from Mordecai, or excuse me, not from Mordecai, took sleep from Ahasuerus that night. And so he calls on his servants to bring him the book of memorable deeds, the Chronicles. I can't sleep. Bring me one of them big, boring books and read it to me. trying to see if Annie sits. She is sitting in the congregation. So years ago, in a previous lifetime, I worked nights at Kellogg's. So I would come home. I'd go to work at 7 o'clock in the morning like Brian does, Tammy. And I was committed to being in church Sunday morning and Sunday evening. Brian chooses one or the other because he likes to sleep. So I would come home. I'd get home at 7:45, and I knew I needed to get back up at 8:30 to get ready to go to church. And I'd lay down, and I'd try to hurry up and fall asleep. That's really difficult. So sometimes if Annie was still in the bedroom, I'd say, "Will you talk to me? Because your voice is soothing." Well, that's what Ahasuerus wanted. He wanted, get one of them big, thick books, those big, boring books, one of those books that's the Book of Memorable Deeds, the Chronicles, and just read it to me. Well, it's nice the way this just happens to turn out. Look at verse 2. It was found written, as Ahasuerus is listening to this, it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana, or Bigthan earlier, and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold and who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" The king's young men who attended him said, "Apparently nothing has been done for him." Again, it's really nice that the reader of the big, boring book just happens to turn to the section of the records that chronicles Mordecai's unrewarded loyalty. Do you remember this happening? It was really only 3 weeks ago, four messages ago, but 3 weeks ago in Esther chapter 2. I'll invite you to turn there with me and look with me at the last five verses of Esther chapter 2. We were sort of disgusted together when we were there on the 1st of September. We were disgusted together that Mordecai was not honored for his heroism. Esther chapter 2, verse 19. "Now when the virgins were gathered together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not made known her kindred, that is her Jewishness, or her people, as Mordecai had commanded her, for Esther obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him." Remember, she was an orphan and raised by him. "In those days," verse 21, "as Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And this assassination plot came to the knowledge of Mordecai. He told it to Queen Esther. Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. When the affair was investigated and found to be so, the men were both hanged on the gallows or hung on a pole. And it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king." And we said together at the time, it doesn't appear that there was any honor given to Mordecai, and that was disgusting to us. Well, the Persians kept detailed records of everything that happened. Ahasuerus had been king now for 12 years. 12 years. And during that 12 years, there must have been volume upon volume upon volume of records written of the things that happened in Persia, the Book of Memorable Deeds, volume 17. There must have been lots written in those 12 years when Ahasuerus is king. What are the odds, first of all, that they would happen to pull off the shelf the correct volume that had the account about Mordecai saving the king's life? Pretty slim. What are the odds, further, that they open up that book and just happen to come to the passage that while they're reading, late at night, early in the morning, while they're reading, they come to the account of Mordecai not being honored for having pointed out that the assassination plot was underway? Well, the odds are pretty small, don't you think? Let me ask the question a different way. What are the odds of that happening when it's part of God's providential plan? 100%. Yep. God was providentially arranging the events of this day. You know, we are not done yet with just happens. There are going to be just happens that come again and again throughout our study of Esther. I'm really glad now. I wasn't glad 3 weeks ago, but I'm really glad now that Mordecai wasn't honored at the time. I'm really glad now that Mordecai did not receive the recognition or the tax break or the gift or whatever else he might have had coming. I'm glad that he didn't get honored when he was loyal to King Ahasuerus, because Mordecai's people, the Jews that is, they need this elaborate ritual which Haman is about to propose. They need this as part of the whole plan of God. So we have this loyalty that is remembered, and now there's going to be Mordecai being honored. Take a look with me at verse 4. I'll read down through verse 9. "And King Ahasuerus said, He's now heard about Mordecai. He's asked, was he ever honored? The answer of his servants was, no, it doesn't appear so. The king said, who is in the court? This is early in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. Who's out there? Now, Haman had just entered the outer court. We might say he had just happened to enter the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows, on the pole that he had prepared for him. And the king's young men said to Ahasuerus, Haman's out there standing in the court. Is Haman a high official? Oh yeah, he's been raised to a position of great importance. So the king said, great, bring him in. Just the guy. So Haman, verse 6, came in, and the king said to him, what should be done, O Haman, what should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor? Haman says to himself, whom would the king like to honor more than me? It just doesn't get any better than this. This is working out great, better than I ever expected. Verse 7, Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and the horse that the king has ridden, and on whose head, the head of the horse, is a royal crown set. Let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let them dress the man whom the king delights to honor. Let them lead him on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. What an articulate response that Haman comes up with for King Ahasuerus' question. Again, it's nice that he just happens to have arrived a few minutes after Ahasuerus' third shift readers got to the part about Mordecai. I can't help but wonder why he's there so early in the morning. It's like nobody else is at work yet. He's there earlier than the rest. Remember, Ahasuerus doesn't know what Haman wants, and Haman doesn't know what Ahasuerus wants when he walks in. They're both ignorant of what's really going on. Why would Haman assume that Ahasuerus wants to honor him? Because he's a glutton for honor. He wants to be honored above all else. For him, that's the pinnacle of his career, to receive that kind of an honor. And so he just immediately assumes when the king says, what should I do for somebody I really want to honor? I want to give high honor to someone. What should I do? And Mordecai gives a quick and thorough response. It almost feels like he's been thinking about this. Like he's thought, it's not the first time he's considered this question. His imagination, another commentator, Timothy Laniak, says, his imagination quickly catches up with his narcissism. That is his focus on self. He's quickly caught up in this. The only surprise for me is that Haman doesn't suggest that the king himself lead the horse around. That would be the only thing to make this just a little bit more over the top. Haman seems to be obsessed with the trappings of royalty, isn't he? He wants to wear what? A robe, not just a really nice robe, but a robe that the king has worn. He wants to ride not just on a steed from the royal stable, but on a horse that the king has ridden. Right? He wants that horse to be wearing the royal crest. It almost feels to me like Haman is angling for Ahasuerus' job. I don't know that. It just he's teetering close, I think, to forming a succession parade. What else could Haman possibly request? Oh, I know. He could have requested the king's wife. Wait for it. Just wait for it. Suggesting an accompanying noble. So, you know, you ought to have that horse led around town by a really, really high official. That's going to backfire on him, isn't it? In just a moment. Proverbs 18:17 says this, a fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are a snare to his soul. The speech of a fool tripped him up. The speech of a fool will get him in trouble. Been there, done that. Psalm 59:12 says this, for the sin of their mouths, the words of their lips, let them be trapped in their pride. That prayer of desire for the for the enemies of God's people to fall. For the sin of their mouths, the words of their lips, let them be trapped in their pride. Well, what's going to happen? Haman doesn't know. Ahasuerus knows what he wants. He has now laid before Haman a juicy morsel that Haman has really bitten on. He has taken it hook, line, and sinker. Speaking of Annie, who's in the congregation tonight, remember when we used to go over to Merle and Willie Tobias's pond and fish? When our kids were little, we'd go over to Merle and Willie's, and you didn't have to use bait. You know, anything shiny, the fish would come at. But whenever Annie and I fished, she was always kind of slow on the twitch. So if you're going to go fishing with Annie, you had to take a pair of needle nose pliers, because that was the only way to get your hook back, or pull it through the other end. I don't know. This is the way that Haman did this. He just, there was no stopping. He was, once he got rolling, he couldn't stop himself. So look at what Ahasuerus says in verse 10. So the king said to Haman, hurry. This is the same thing the king said the day that Esther invited the king and Haman to the first banquet. The king sent messengers to Haman, said, hurry. Same word. Hurry, Haman. Take the robes, take the horse, as you have said. Haman has said, yes, yes, yes. Take them as you have said, and do so to Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you have mentioned. So Haman took the robes and the horse, and he dressed Mordecai and led him through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor, over and over again, as they traipsed through the city in front of all the officials and people who were standing around in Susa. Why did Haman come to the palace early that morning? He was going to ask Ahasuerus for permission to do what? Hang Mordecai. Haman was eager to lift him up, right? Haman was eager to lift up Mordecai. Not like this, but he was eager to lift him up. The only thing that Haman wanted more than for himself, well, maybe I got it backwards. I was going to say the only thing Haman wanted more than for himself to be honored was for Mordecai to be killed. But maybe the only thing that Haman wanted more than to kill Mordecai was to have Haman be honored. I'm not sure which one he wanted more, but he wanted them both badly. And this is not seeming to end well for Haman, is it? He was so excited when he came to the palace early that morning. His workmen had spent the night building a 75-foot tall gallows or pole on which they would impale or hang Mordecai. 75 feet tall, taller than any building in Susa, taller than the trees. He came to the palace sure that he would get Ahasuerus' attaboy for doing this, because after all, Haman's now wearing his ring. Haman has all the authority. It didn't turn out quite so well. Well, verse 12, let me finish the part of chapter 6. We're going to stop before we get to chapter 6, verse 14. We're just going to go through verse 13 tonight. So verse 12, then Mordecai returned to the king's gate. He's dropped off by Haman. But Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. And Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends, those same advisors that he spoke with in chapter 5. He told them everything that had happened to him. Then his wise men, that is his friends, and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. Again, when Haman left for work that morning, he was in such a good mood. Now the bottom has fallen out from under him. After that citywide honor tour, Mordecai goes back to work and sits at the king's gate. Haman rushes home with his face covered, pulls his jacket up, pulls it down around his face. He rushes home after what is very graciously, I would call a hard day at the office. Perhaps it was much worse. That's a bit of an understatement, a hard day at the office. And like in chapter 5 last week, Our passage tonight ends with Haman getting advice from Zeresh and his friends, his advisors, his wise men. They're a little less optimistic this time. Remember last time they said, construct gallows and hang Mordecai. This time they say, you seem to be at odds with Mordecai, that Jew. It's not going to go well for you. They're a bit pessimistic now. I wonder why they thought, maybe you have a brainy idea. Why do you think the advisors to Mordecai, the advisors to Haman, why did they think that Mordecai's Jewishness was what was so dangerous for Haman? What is there about Mordecai being a Jew and the fact that Haman has now had to honor him? Why does that mean to them that Haman is his goose is cooked? What is there about Mordecai's Jewishness that makes it so dangerous for Haman? And maybe they've heard stories about how God historically has protected his people. Just like the people of Canaan would have heard stories as the Israelites made their way through the wilderness and defeated the Og and Sihon and the rest of those kings of the pagan peoples on their way there. So they've heard stories about how God has been on his people's side throughout history. Anything else? Good idea, Pastor? Yeah, but remember, you can't stop that, right? Because after it's been written, after the edict has been issued, stamped with the king's own ring in Mordecai's hand, in Haman's hand, it's going to be that whole thing, that whole ball is rolling now. Indeed, it's 10, 11 months away, but it's moving. And I suppose his advisors are saying, oh, well, if Mordecai represents the Jewish people, this whole thing is going to be going to become unhinged. Yeah, I don't know how much the common people knew about Esther's Jewishness yet. I'm not sure that the king knows about Esther's Jewishness yet. There's all this stuff that's it's available to us, but not to the characters in the drama, right? So if it comes out that Mordecai is a Jew and he's being honored, then that sort of makes the Jewishness of Mordecai now an issue. It was ironic when we read it at the time, because we knew that Mordecai had been loyal to the king and had foiled the plot to assassinate him, but Haman didn't know that. And Ahasuerus didn't know, apparently, or didn't have any recollection that Mordecai had done it. And so, yeah, it is sort of ironic, isn't it, that Haman's accusation is these Jews are people who are not loyal to the king, not loyal to the kingdom. They ought to be exterminated. And now it comes to light that Mordecai indeed has been very loyal to the king and been honored above all others. So in a slightly closer historical context, the stuff we read about in the first half of Daniel would be known in the Persian kingdom. We haven't moved 1,000 years down the road. We've moved 100 years down the road. So it ought to be those accounts ought to be available to them in terms of knowing how Yahweh cares for the Jews. Great. They did. Yeah, so between the beginning of Esther and now, Ahasuerus led a military campaign against Greece and lost badly. But the edict, remember, makes it appropriate. The edict that was issued by Haman's ring in Ahasuerus' name was that all the people of Susa could kill Jews. So they may not be out of the woods yet. Now, haven't we talked about this? You were probably away at a show. Yeah, Haman was an Agagite. So whether Haman is related to the Agag that Saul refused to kill or not, Haman's an Agagite, and Mordecai in Esther is said to be related to Kish, a Benjamite. Remember him? Saul's dad. So the writer of Esther, at least, is making this connection between Haman and Agag and Mordecai and Saul, whether we could trace their genealogies there or not. There's at least a literary attempt to connect them. And so, indeed, the readers of Esther are thinking just exactly what you're thinking, that it didn't end well for Agag, right? But Saul failed. In this case, we've got Saul's relative, Mordecai, and another battle going to ensue here. We'll see how it all turns out. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. It's hard to, I don't know. All I know is that what Ahasuerus heard that night was at least this account about the assassination plot and Mordecai's role in foiling it. So needless to say, Haman's friends have indicated that you are perhaps overdone here. What role did Esther play in tonight's passage? What role did Mordecai play in tonight's? Well, that was back in chapter 2. Okay, so in the events that take place in chapter 6, what role does Esther play? None. All right, how about Mordecai? What great, brave, and heroic action does Mordecai engage in chapter 6? He sits on the horse. Yeah, he holds his arms out while Haman puts on the robe. He sits on the horse, and when he's all done, what does he do? Goes back to work and sits at the king's gate. So Esther's not the hero in Esther chapter 6. Mordecai is not the hero in Esther chapter 6. Haman is certainly not the hero in Esther chapter anything, let alone in Esther chapter 6. So if Esther's not calling the shots, if Mordecai's not calling the shots, who's calling the shots? God is. Yahweh is. He's showing his power in a humorous way. Thank you. I love these passages where you get to see God's sense of humor. So God is showing his power by overturning expectations. Another guy I'm reading on Esther, I wrote down three little quotes.